Good morning. This is Tracy Hales-Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico. Today I'm talking to Rebecca Lawton, author of The Oasis This Time, Living and Dying with Water in the West. Hello, Becca.
Hi, Tracy. How are you?
I'm great. I really enjoyed reading your book, though it was both tear-jerking and sad and brought me to awareness on a lot of points also.
Good. That's a great combination.
So this is a collection of essays, some of which were published in other documents, correct?
That's right. Yes. When I submitted this proposal, I had one chapter written, the first chapter about 29 Palms, California, and then the idea that many of the other pieces that I'd been writing related to fire and habitat and water would fit in this collection somehow. And that's what we ended up doing.
Water goes all the way through it, even though there's a lot about drought and a lot about fire and birds. And you go all over the country with this and up into Canada. I thought it was interesting that you told them you were there to write about water and storytelling, and they gave you a really hard time to get across the border.
Oh, yes, I know. That was a surprise to me, too. I had been told subsequently that it really depends what port of entry you go through, and this one that we chose was not one of the ones that made it easy based on how, you know, based on the way I described my project.
Right.
I just wanted to know more.
But water and storytelling is pretty much your life.
Yeah, it is. That's the direction I've headed. I mean, water has been my main compound since I was a teenager, and then just has stayed that way, you know, surprising me, actually, probably as much as anybody. But picking up the storytelling part, you know, has been later in an evolution of the science work I was doing and wanting the results to be known outside a small contingent of people.
So you have your first degree in geology, and then the second one is an MFA in creative writing, correct?
That's correct, and there's many years between those two degrees, many, many years of experience and kind of looking at how was this career really going to shape up and what would help propel it forward more effectively, and that's why the MFA followed rather than, and I had looked at advanced degrees in geology or paleontology, but ended up going with the creative writing as part of the storytelling arc in
right.
my life.
Oh, that's great. I'm glad you did.
Thanks.
Yes. So you still are very active, and through the book, you're very active with, you know, hiking and rafting and everything else. When do you write?
Oh, you know, I was thinking as I was driving here to Albuquerque this morning, every minute of this tour, for instance, that mm-hmm. I haven't been reading or meeting people or exploring a little bit in each of the different areas, I've been working on my writing. I get up early and do a few hours then and then cram it in any other place I can. So yeah, it really does get kind of jammed into the margins, but that's just how it is at the moment. It hasn't always been that way, but at the moment it is.
So you're working on a new book right now?
I am, Tracy. You know, the chapter, we were just talking about Canada, and the chapter in here about going to Canada to research a novel,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing the final pass through. Well, final is only final when it's final, but
right.
But I'm doing a revision of the Canada novel right now in preparation for sending it out.
Oh, exciting.
So, yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah. And you did write another novel, Junction, Utah?
Yes. Junction, Utah came out of my earlier life as a river guide where I was working on the Green River and Yampa Rivers up in Dinosaur National Monument, and I was also working as a geologist in the off-season, you know, when I wasn't running rivers, and I was seeing the the coming of the oil boom in Utah. It hadn't happened yet, but actually there had been an earlier boom, maybe several, but the current boom that we were that we're in, where there's more drilling going on in some of the public lands areas, hadn't started to the degree it's going on now. And I wanted to write a novel that looked at that coming into an agricultural community where water quality is really important and the availability of water is really important, and that to the protagonist, who's a river guide, of course, water is very important. And I just wanted to see how all these communities came together in a fictional way, but based on what was really going on and still is going on in northeastern Utah. So that's the basis for Junction, Utah, and I was lucky with it to submit it for a Willa Award, and it did win a Willa Award for original softcover fiction.
That's huge.
Great honor.
It is. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
The book we're talking about right now, The Oasis This Time, is nonfiction. Which do you prefer writing?
Oh, gosh. You know, I can't say I prefer one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
I like writing both immensely. Fiction is fun in that if you get painted into a corner, you can make something up and get yourself out.
That's true.
Whereas in essay writing, it's I've got these facts. I want to see how they come together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a different kind of a challenge, and I like both challenges quite a bit. Equally fun in different ways, I think.
Right. Would you like to read something for us?
Yes. You know, you had asked me to have a few passages prepared. I wanted to read something, an excerpt from the chapter on the Stanislaus River.
Oh, yes, I like that one.
Thank you. And it's very timely because the 50th year anniversary of the civil disobedience actions that tried to stop the impoundment of the Stanislaus River is right now. This is the 50th anniversary of that time. And so in celebration or observation of that time, I wanted to read from this chapter called A Lot to Learn.
Great.
My first and longest-term love affair began, as many great loves do, on a perfect summer day beside a shining body of water. I was 17. Within months of discovering the object of my affection, the Stanislaus River, I learned to guide there. It was a lovely Sierra Nevada stream, the ideal place to learn the art and science of running whitewater. On my very first trip, though, before I'd ever considered becoming a rafter myself, I found a band of men and women who'd already made the Stan their spiritual home. They'd been goners for the river for years, its energized currents and quiet places, its deep eddies and standing waves. They loved the rock walls ringing with calls of canyon wrens. Their hearts beat faster to see butterflies dancing by on breezes as if choreographed. The shade of canopied trees became their shelter. The river soothed and seduced and healed. That year I discovered, too, in a 1-2 punch, the knockdown, drag-out side of love. The stretch of river I'd just fallen for was doomed, planned for submersion under its own collected waters behind an earth-filled dam. The new feat of engineering would be called New Melones, such an innocuous name, Spanish for melons. The dam would be sited, as so many before it in California had been, atop the location of an historic town of the same name. Reputedly christened for the gourd-shaped and sized gold nuggets mined there during the 1840s, the settlement of Melones, too, was doomed. It now lives mainly on registers of permanently destroyed towns, not ghost towns, which still stand at least in part, but towns wiped off the earth.
You don't have a lot of good things to say about dams.
You know, the more I looked into them, the less positive they looked, especially for our changing climate.
Yes.
And that's what this chapter talks about a lot, how with our increasingly arid West and our increasingly warming West, as the data is showing, then storing huge amounts of water above ground results in so much evaporation into the heated air that we lose so much that the profit and loss equations look pretty pale.
Yeah, that was very enlightening to me, and it made a lot of sense the way you wrote about that.
Well, you know, honestly, I was pretty stunned. My first reaction to damming a river that I had fallen for was, well, gosh, why would you do that here? This is just so beautiful. Can't you find somewhere ugly to do this?
Right.
And you know, I was just a kid, but then as I dug into it more, and especially when I was writing this book, I found more and more not to recommend above ground storage as we've been doing it, but as the Union of Concerned Scientists is saying, mm-hmm. any new storage needs to consider the warming climate and look at storing underground.
Right.
So, yeah.
I thought that was very interesting. So this brings me to the question of research. You're constantly researching. Do you think about an article you're going to write and then research it? Or do you find your facts and collect them and then write around those?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I think it happens both ways a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, when I was going to do an update on the Stanislaus River in the New Maloney's Dam, I just started poking around.
Mm-hmm.
And finding what the Army Corps of Engineers was saying about the project many years later, things that they couldn't admit at the time. And that became fascinating, and that helped shape the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then because it's a personal essay, I also wanted to include the part about relationships and loss of innocence in relationships. So losing just that piece of ourselves that is never the same when we get information that is kind of contrary to how we've been brought up, maybe, you know?
Right, yes.
And so I thought those two things really interfingered well together. And mm-hmm. so I guess more than anything, even while I'm researching, I'm looking for how does this fit with a story I've heard from a friend or that's happened in my own life that would be compelling and make it memorable. So that's what I'm looking for.
I like that. So that's truly creative nonfiction.
Yes, and that is so interesting that you say that, because when I went to get my MFA, I went to a school known for writing fiction
mm-hmm.
and teaching fiction, teaching how to write fiction, how to read it, analyze what an author's doing. And I said, but I'd like to write a book of creative nonfiction. And that book was Reading Water, my first book about river culture and running rivers that came out in 2002. And the teacher looked at me and she said, well, what's that? So creative nonfiction as a genre had not kind of sprouted wings yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun for me to be in a place where that was just being developed, you know?
Yes.
so...
And that's exactly what you've done here. Now, I noticed that you also are writing guidelines and have a book on writing tips.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a couple of them. One that I wrote with my really great writing friend, Jordan Rosenfeld, who has written 5 writing guides for Writer's Digest books. And then the one that I have on my website that I just one summer decided I would do a writing tip a day and send it out to my newsletter subscribers, and then I just put them all together in a book, and anyone can get it at any time on my website, just for the fun of it, really.
Oh, that's great. And your website is beccalawton.com.
Yeah, that's right.
And readers can find that there. So do you get really discouraged when you write like this about, you know, the scourge of what dams have done and the loss of so much and the drought and the fire?
Well, I do. You know, much of the research that's been done on climate communication, for instance, really falls down on the side of, you know, it all boils down to altruism. If we're not directly affected by climate, and we are all to some degree, but not all of us are as much on the leading edge of climate effects right now as other people, and so right. we can live in a kind of a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And our actions to change, to, say, make our lives carbon neutral, or to become involved in local water conservation efforts, or just to be mindful about how we're using what our planet has to give at
what
this point.
What we have, right.
Yeah, there's not a lot of research that shows that altruism is going to be the thing that kicks in to save us, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is discouraging. And then on the other hand, people who are really in the know, like Bill McKibben of 350.org, says we still have time, so let's do it. And so that's what keeps me working hard, because mm-hmm. right now is the time to be working hard on it. So I'm hopeful, and I'm not hopeful.
I understand. That makes sense. And on the end, at the end of this book of the Oases, you've written, here are some gestures that we can do. And I like that list of some things we can be mindful of.
Yeah. I really wanted to come from, don't we all get a little turned off as we're preached to? And so I thought, well, what about just changing our mindset? What about just coming from a mindfulness place? What if we just know where our drinking water comes from and we're mm-hmm. we're conscious of that? That seems to be a really good first step.
Right.
So I'm glad you like that list. I like it too, and sometimes I've been ending the readings on this tour with that small page.
Yeah, it really sheds some hope that we can do something, and the first step, like you say, is changing the mindfulness.
Yes, and it's so interesting, and I know you know this from reading the book, that the humanities, it's creative writing like this, and it's poetry, and it's painting, and it's dance and music that helps change these minds.
That's
helps
right.
change our minds.
Right.
So it's very important to have the ability to express ourselves about it and not have that looked as a peripheral thing, but as a critical, essential thing.
Right. Which drinking water is.
Yes, there's not much we can replace drinking water with.
Right. Would you like to read another little passage?
Sure. One passage I've been reading a lot on this tour is the one from the chapter First Responders about the fires in Sonoma Valley.
Oh, yes.
And so just a few paragraphs from that. How would that be?
That would be great.
Okay, First Responders. Sunday evening, October 8th, 2017. My husband Paul and I are sitting with friends after dinner, lingering late in our dining room in Sonoma, when a jolt of wind hits the house. Our open windows shake with the force. Gusts reach gale intensity all at once, leashed things now let loose. Leaves and branches batter the glass, debris tossed from live oaks on the hill behind us, and Douglas firs toward the street. The tops of redwoods bend and pitch. We who are sitting at the table meet cautious eyes. We've been living with an unprecedented dryness in Sonoma Valley, the forests thick with parched ground cover. Biologists have called our premature fall of leaves leaf drops, a sign of plants unhappy with their environment. El Nino conditions of last year, with double the average precipitation for our region, were followed by the hottest summer on record. Woods are thick with understory that's subsequently desiccated, creating standing tinder around the thousands of homes on many streets that wind through numerous hills and fields of our hometown. Everything is ready to burn. We do and we don't recognize this wind. Fire wind, I say. although I've never known it to go from 0 to 60 in an instant. In Southern California, the Santa Anas whip off nearby deserts and down canyons toward the coastal plain, sucked toward lower pressures at the ocean. Threat of fire rides the winds into neighborhoods and towns. In Northern California, the process is the same, but we call the winds Diablo, devil wind.
That was a frightening passage to read. And I thought it was interesting that you juxtaposed that with the discussions on water.
Yeah, you know, one thing that we, so I worked for decades in the San Francisco Bay region, in the North Bay, on water issues. And what conservationists had come to believe, and their research had showed this after many years of assessing all the maps, that if we want to be prepared for climate change, if we want climate resilience, we have to save our riparian bands, our river bands of trees and diverse species, because they provide climate resilience.
Right.
So the very question of fire is a question of protecting our streams. So I found that really interesting and wanted to write about that and put it next to fire, like you're saying.
Yeah, I found that really interesting also. And then your discussions on human-made oases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, Californians are really big on those made, those engineered oases.
We're, right.
That's our Cadillac Desert.
Right.
Reputation. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the whole discussion on Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen Las Vegas in so long, but on this trip, on my way home, after reading in Flagstaff, Arizona tomorrow night, I'll see Vegas again, and I'm kind of bracing myself for how big it's become.
Yes, I've heard that. I haven't been there for some time either. It does not really a place that sounds inviting anymore.
I know what you mean, and then people come in from all over the world, so there's something about it. Yeah,
there is. So are you still running rivers?
You know, I didn't get out on rivers this year, just timing-wise with my job. I have a job now as executive director of Playa Residency Program for writers, artists, and scientists in the Oregon Outback, and every trip I was invited on or could even contemplate came at a time where there was an important meeting or something. So next summer, for sure, I'm not going to let that happen again.
Good. Yes, Playa, that sounds like a wonderful experience, though, for writers and scientists like yourself.
The reason I work there and believe in it so strongly is because I do see how it boosts people's work. You know, people come with a project they haven't been able to finish.
Mm-hmm.
They're either out of ideas or haven't had time or just need somebody else to take care of them while they finish something.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's critical to a lot of work that goes on. And in fact, I've noticed that Playa and other residency programs as well are showing up more and more in the acknowledgments of pages of books that really matter.
And you have been on several yourself, and you had a Fulbright, at least one Fulbright.
That's right.
To write on.
I got a Fulbright visiting research chair for the research I wanted to do that you and I were talking about earlier, going to Canada to find a story about water and storytelling. And so, yeah, and Fulbright was amazing because they took my proposal, they looked at it, they said, hey, this is a great idea. And then they matched me with an institution that I hadn't applied to, or I think I said, yeah, I'll go anywhere, even though my first choice is British Columbia forests, where I can study the wildest part of North America, and as it's been called.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fulbright matched me up with Alberta and the heart of the oil industry. So they were very wise to do so. I just didn't know that at the time. Yeah, no, it was very interesting, and I can't say enough good about that organization, both Fulbright Canada and our Fulbright program. The work that comes out of those programs is, it's really world-changing. And as you mentioned, the residencies there, I don't think there's a single book that I've published that I didn't finish in a residency program.
Oh, that's great. So that gave you the experience to help run Playa.
Correct. It did. I came in knowing what I thought people needed to get a project done, or, I mean, I'm always learning other things that are needed on the job and seeing how people respond. But part of what people need, and this is an element in a lot of these residency programs, and certainly at Playa, is the natural world close by.
And I found the essay, I can't remember which one it was, but you were trying to force yourself to write and not go outside. And then when you finally did, you went, oh, yes, that's what I needed.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because that is exactly what happened in that particular residency and subsequently in that essay. So,
from closing the window on the robin to...
Yeah.
Do you have another couple of paragraphs to read for us?
Well, Tracy, how would it be if I read that last page? Do you think that would be something you'd like?
I do. I would love to hear you read that.
Okay, so the last chapter in the book is just this three-page essay, sort of conclusion, called The Oasis This Time. It's the title essay. It talks a little bit about how we live and die with and by water, and how there are more refugees in the world now than any time since World War II, and the United Nations and other organizations are saying it's a lot in part because of water scarcity. And so when we think of what is a call to action, then I like to read this last page, and it just goes like this. All right, then, here are some gestures, some that may matter only to ourselves. I can drink and use fresh water with mindfulness. I can give it my deepest respect. The Buddhists teach us to do no harm. I do no harm to other creatures by intentionally conserving water that they need to. I can open to the idea that water conservation is likely the new normal. Where does leadership begin? Why not with me, with the smallest, most mindful actions? I can integrate thoughtful use as a way of life. I can choose not to plant water-intensive trees and shrubs. I can work within my community. I can support the building of infrastructure for recycled water. I can support legislation that requires water-saving devices in all homes and businesses. I can help protect water sources for wildlife in the parks and forests near me. I can follow the rules that are there to respect water source areas important to public health and safety. I know the river that slakes my thirst. In the Northern California town I called home for decades, drinking water is piped south from the Russian River to the north, which draws from the Eel River even farther away. A swim in the Eel or a walk beside its banks is a journey into knowing what is at stake if we drain it. When I learn where my water comes from, everything changes. I act with new awareness. If I have a choice between my green lawn or a water-fed wild place my children and grandchildren can enjoy, I know which I would choose. I'd choose a world in which we shelter the natural oasis that has long sheltered us.
And with that, I think it's a good time to sign off.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Great questions and your thoughtful reading of this book. I so appreciate it.
Oh, well, I appreciate you writing it and telling us what it has to say. Thank you, Becca.
Thank you so much.
And that was Becca Lawton talking to us about many issues and reading from her book, The Oasis This Time, Living and Dying with Water and the West. This is Tracy Hales Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.